Welcome to the Biology of Trauma podcast, the show that provides professionals with the knowledge and tools for effective, science-based solutions for the trauma healing journey. I am your host, Dr. Amy, and I've done the hard work so you can stop your endless searching, have a roadmap for your own work, and be able to help others more powerfully. Welcome to this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. I am your host, Dr. Amy. I'm so excited for this interview to bring this to you because it's going to be a different angle on what is trauma and what even is trauma-informed care. If you are a professional, what would that even mean for you to be trauma-informed? This is going to be the most important interview to understanding that and for getting a picture of why it's so important and not only important, necessary, essential for you to do your own work in order for you to develop your nervous system to have the capacity to hold the space for your patients or your clients. And so we break it down in this interview of what exactly does it mean to be trauma-informed and not just looking at the individual, but the collective. In this episode, we're answering the question, how can we create the attuned and co-regulated therapeutic relationships needed for being trauma-informed? Here's what you will learn. How attachment can shape our emotional responses as adults. The impact of intergenerational and ancestral trauma on attachment. Strategies to stay regulated and connected in relationships. And the importance of looking at ancestral and collective influences. Moving from distancing behaviors to being fully present in relationships. And the role of flow, stagnation, and embodied practices in attachments. To join me for this conversation is Thomas Hubel, a renowned teacher, author, and international facilitator whose lifelong work integrates the core insights of the great wisdom traditions and mysticism with the discoveries of science. Since the early 2000s, he has been facilitating large-scale events and courses that focus on the healing and integration of trauma. Over the last decade, he has facilitated dialogue with thousands of people around healing the collective traumas of racism, oppression, colonialism, genocides, and more. I'm excited for this interview. Let's jump in. Thomas, I love the lens that you have of the nervous system, where you're looking at not only individual, but ancestral, collective. And through the lens that you have of the nervous system, how would you describe the reason why someone might get sick as a result of trauma? Here we're talking about the biology of trauma, and yet for your lens, and your lens is unique, and I love how expansive your lens is of the nervous system, and it's very inclusive. How does that influence your thinking when it comes to someone then experiencing a physical health illness as a result of trauma?
Yeah, there are many reasons. So first of all, when I sit with somebody that carries trauma, or it happens usually in my groups where there are many people, like there are large groups, and then we do individual work within a collective presencing container. I feel that trauma creates like a preformed sculpture in a person. And what I mean by that is that the frozen information of the trauma that got split off or is hyperactivated and a lot of exaggerated stress is stored somewhere in a certain, I often describe this like a time-space file. So let's say it is a simplified version. If somebody gets traumatized at age 2, something happened and child got hospitalized and came out of the hospital and the trauma has not been restored. So there is at the 2-year-old level of development, there is information in a preformed state, like it's kind of a frozen information within the ice of trauma. And when that person comes to me, let's say at age 40, and has, anxiety disorder or like has a lot of fear, and then we see that the fear is actually stored at a certain place in the nervous system of the person. And so I'm speaking to a 40-year-old client, but actually we are going, my nervous system searches, like is tuning in with the beginning of that fear. So the fear actually has a certain age. And when I attune to the fear, I get to the physical compensation mechanisms. I get to the emotional situation. I get to the stress that is stored in the body. And So I call precise attunement love. Like I often say, precision is love, because trauma is either repetitive and there were many traumatic incidents, so then it has multiple layers, obviously. But my nervous system, I believe, needs to become the outer environment the nervous system of my client never had. And maybe it never had protection, it didn't have the right relational attunement, whatever was missing. And so I believe we therapists and our coaches, consultants hold spaces for others is how can my nervous system be so fluid that I can move in my own ages of development fluidly, which means I need to do my own work first, because otherwise I can't provide that space. And secondly, the inner sculpture, we see this when the person comes into the room and begins to talk about the trauma, the physical body starts to show a certain architecture, the emotional experience, the stress levels, the mental framing or the mental top-down control of the physical experience show up. And I think if we are dialed in enough and attuned enough, then I believe the trauma work is much more precise and also much more powerful than if we are not so perceptive on that level. So we need much more storyline, and then often we talk much more about the trauma than really going to this somatic aspect of it. And that's a little bit how it looks like to me. That's kind of maybe a visual framing or kind of description how that shows up. But another part is that the trauma is usually stored at a certain space-time level, at a certain part of the body. And that part of the body has a lower data transfer or data flow. That's why I believe different tissues, different functions are less energized, less informed. They are not staying as much in a form because they are not so informed, and they lose part of their coherence. That's why I would say it leads to health issues, because there's a kind of a disintegration of the coherence of certain organs or certain parts of the body. And the last thing maybe to say is that often I observe that when clients speak about difficulties or their trauma areas, the inner seeing, which I believe is an important part, the seeing inside and the seeing outside is impaired, is hurt. So there's a filter in seeing the world, and there's a filter in having self-clarity. So the trauma naturally comes with a zone in the seeing that is kind of reduced or shut down. And that's why it's hard to see ourselves clearly in the areas where we have difficulties. I think that's also a function. So often through the eyes, we can see a lot of the dysregulation in the system and how the person is still absorbed in the past, in the trauma, and cannot be present to the current experience. But if we see that not as a deficiency, because often these symptoms show up as if I'm not able to do certain things, versus we are able to shut down a certain part. We are able to reduce the emotional or stress intensity in our system. So the trauma response is actually very intelligent in itself. And I think reframing it makes it much more easy to re-own it for the client.
I can sense that there's so much depth right there, because again, this is all of your work. Now, for someone who has some type of physical illness, whether that's maybe abdominal pain or a skin disorder, chronic pain, how would they even get to the point where they could have those deeper insights and see the trauma component to their physical illness?
Yeah, what we often do is we go step by step. We take the symptoms that appear, and then we go deeper and we guide our clients to tune in with the parts that seem like causing symptoms or pain or whatever, or other symptoms. And then we look at what is the information that the body shows step by step by step. When my client goes deeper and I hold the space and I'm precisely following the inner movements. So it's less about intellectual reflecting. It's more about attunement and letting information arise that the mind can process. So it's more like a deep inner listening. And when I see the person starts to drift off, so then there's a gentle invitation to look, okay, are we aware of that and how we come back? But we let the body tell us its story. Because I believe that our bodies are millions of years old. I think there is a myth about, of course, it's true that we are as old as is written in our passport, but I think we should look at the body much more as the biocomputer that has been developed over millions of years. And I think we see how much information is stored and how complex that biocomputer is and how beautiful that biocomputer is, that all these functions work together every day and for a pretty long time. And so I trust that the intelligence of the body surfaces the right information, but it needs to be pretty related, because otherwise we drift off in all kinds of stories and our defense mechanisms take us all kinds of labyrinths. But when we stay on track, basically, then we can allow every movement and let that movement open up the next movement. And then open up the next movement. And like that, we go deeper and we see, okay, these are the symptoms, but here are the roots. And here we come closer to what happened either in our childhood or in our embryological development or in our ancestral lineages or in the cultural field that we grew up in and how they are all interrelated. And I think also, when we look at attachment trauma, for example, of course, attachment trauma is very important and it has a huge impact on our physical and emotional mental development. And at the same time, there is most of the time not a standalone attachment trauma. That attachment trauma happened because our parents are traumatized too, and their parents most of the time were traumatized too. So there is a whole system, and I'm describing this as the IAC fluidity. Like the individual, ancestral, and collective, either frozenness or liquefaction of life information that through the precise attunement to all these levels, and sometimes we go deeper in the individual work, but then we need to open something in the ancestral field for the physical healing to go deeper. Because it's not just information that is stored in the person, it's not a separate particle in life, but always interdependent. And I think that interdependence is a very important and beautiful principle.
We have a lot of professionals and they are partly on the health side, so health practitioners of some sort, and half of them are on the mental health side. Yet this is where we need to come together. And how would one of these professionals be able to know and sense that the patient or client that they're working with were having some ancestral trauma showing up in their life, in their physical health right now, and to know that's where we need to invite the body to go there.
It's interesting how you describe these two, the mental health and the physical health, when in my experience, they're always interconnected. So I think even mental health is very somatic, and that the symptoms show up in the mental sphere maybe, but the origin is often or most of the time deeply anchored in the body. So in both, I would say modern medicine brought so many new innovations and inventions that are amazing. And at the same time, our lens became very individual focused. And I think opening, at least in some disciplines in medicine or in psychotherapy, the space more into a human being is interrelated and there are data flow systems. I simply believe that our nervous system, and I don't have a physical proof, a scientific proof for what I'm going to say now, but in my understanding, when I sit with clients, I can literally see and feel different departments of their nervous system when we relate to what's happening now, when we relate to what happened in the childhood. So it's a different attunement capacity. When we relate to ancestors, I believe we're going into our ancestral nervous system. We didn't train using that capacity a lot. So I think it's not very mainstream, but I think it's a part of our nervous system where we sense ancestors. And there's a part of our nervous system that is plugged into the collective system, how we sense collective fields and also collective. And so I think the first step to your question is that we open up our own minds as professionals, how to make more space that the individual is embedded in a larger data flow. And that data either flows or the data is stagnant in the past. So it's also stagnant in the body of the person that sits in front of me. And so when I begin to relate to the stagnation, to the trauma holding, the tension, the hyperstress that is in the system, so then by peeling the first layers, and if I pay attention, then I can see, oh, that actually exceeds the biography of the person. And we need to look at, for example, the grandmother's war experience, because there a lot of trauma happened that influences the person, the woman that sits in front of me strongly, or the man that sits in front of me. And that's like an attunement so that my nervous system gives me a lot of reference experience. But for that, I need to open my own data channels, because if they are closed, no way that it looks like a person is a black box. Like, you need to ask for the data. But then when we train it more, we see, okay, I ask you for data, but I also have a perception that is on. And if I'm present and I'm in an open present state, my nervous system mirrors a lot of information. And I think that capacity is with more and more somatic trauma therapies that many of us become much more sensitive to that information. So it takes it from a kind of airy, cloudy something into much more concrete perceptions that can be verified with the clients. We can ask clients and we can verify our own experience, but it becomes like a guiding process in the process work. And so often, just by making space that there is ancestral information that might influence my clients a lot. And I have seen many, many times, as when we include the ancestral information, a lot of change in the person just because we included the ancestral information, and that sparked a much deeper process in the personal dimension of the person. And that interwovenness, I think, is very important, that the past is not just gone. And I think the recent epigenetic studies that are coming up at least point in that direction also, even if there are still debates about it. In my experience, sitting with thousands of people, for me, that seems very obvious, the connection.
Now, if we applied this to our current existing medical model, this would really change things, because as we are trained at the moment, it's by taking a history of just that individual. We start, if we're really good, especially if we're a functional medicine professional, and we're going to start even with the in utero exposures. And I mean, us being really good. But then we're taking a history and we're asking basically a checklist of, well, have you had this type of event in your life? Have you had this type of event? If we are considered trauma-informed, then we're even doing a history on specifically the adverse childhood experiences and calculating a score. And yet what you're saying with the nervous system, and I love how you describe the nervous system of being a book of life, right? Like the book of life. And there's so much data, there's so much information, there's so many influences that come in that aren't ever going to show up on a checklist of events. And so it seems like we really need to shift our understanding and definition of what it means to be a trauma-informed professional, especially in the medical field. And what would you see as your ideal for this is what it would mean to be a trauma-informed professional?
So my ideal would be that we find a combination of inner and outer capacities. Because I think there's a strong emphasis on all the scientifically proven facts that we can form into checkboxes and lists and everything that is standardized. But at the same time, when I ask about, I think we need all of that, but I need my inner experience as a mirror to confirm when I, for example, ask about an event and the person says yes, then my nervous system becomes like an echo chamber to kind of feel how much data, information, contraction, stagnation is still in the body or in the experience of that person when I ask that question. If you ask me what's my ideal would be like many trained professionals that have the whole checklist and trauma-informed aspects that we ask. At the same time, are also very in tune or attuned to receive the quality of information that is in the system when I ask the question. Because as I said before, often when I see my clients speak about something that was difficult, immediately we can feel the contraction in the body, the system centralizes, the throat gets tight or the heart gets tight, the solar plexus is very tense, there is emotion or there is an absence of emotion. My nervous system tells me this. It's like a moment-to-moment sensor. And I think we need the scientific data, we need the sensing data, and we need to combine them. And of course, in order to get to this ideal, we need a lot of training also in the sensing capacity. I believe that, for example, when I speak a lot about collective trauma, and I believe that as one symptom of collective trauma is that we need to ask people what they feel. I think that in itself for me is already part of a collectively traumatized world. Because when my emotional system cannot pick up on your emotional system, then there is kind of a gap between us. Otherwise, we naturally feel when somebody is sad, we feel that they're sad. When somebody is afraid, we feel they're scared. Or when somebody is numb, I feel immediately, the emotional system is a bit shut down. And to follow that, I think is important. Then emotions are not this kind of privatized properties, but they're actually mutual landscapes that connect us and they connect the fabric of the world. And so fear in a child that has healthy attachment is an emotion that connects the child to the parents and creates like a down regulation and a mutual space to then create curiosity and courage. But in a child that doesn't have good co-regulation, the fear becomes a kind of a privatized emotion in the system. And later on, as grown-ups, we don't reach out because we never really had that experience of being well co-regulated. So fear is actually something I try to handle myself versus I bring naturally to you. It saves much more time than to run around with it myself. So that emotions become again shared spaces and shared landscapes. I think that's how healthy communities, also healthy healthcare system looks like. I think because our healthcare systems are so overwhelmed often with trauma, physical and emotional and whatever, like in healthcare crisis and so on, I think there's a lot of stress on healthcare professionals. And I think we need much more training, first how to work it in ourselves, but then that clinical distance, I think, is already a bit outdated. And we actually need emotional maturity to be regulated in overwhelming situations. For our clients or patients, overwhelming situations need emotional maturity, not separation. And I think that's a big change because we are much more part of things when we are connected, and that needs more inner work.
I think what you said there is so important for professionals to hear. So I'm going to ask you to say that again. We need maturity to stay regulated, especially overwhelming emotional situations. Say a little more on that maturity and that essence of the nervous system that would make their nervous system be mature to even be able to be regulated even during overwhelm.
Yeah. Well, what I meant is when patients or clients are in states of overwhelm, so it's very easy to that stress or that numbness, that absence, the shutdown or the fight and flight mechanism triggers medical professionals. Either people become very angry and short or people kind of withdraw and get numb. But in those moments, when I'm resting in a grounded state, I can stay related to that exaggerated state and become a co-regulate power in the room to let that slowly de-escalate. But if that triggers me, and anyway, I had a full day, I saw so many people, I have tons of work to do, and then somebody is stressed, it's much easier to go a bit back and to distance myself from the stress that looks at first as good for me. But I think the contraction that needs to happen in me to pull out is actually not good for me. But that's a big step, because that means that I need to look, when I get triggered by stress in my environment, I need to look actually what is the stress in me that gets turned on. And so if I integrate that more and more, I become actually a very grounding force in whatever environment I'm working in. And otherwise, I need to regulate myself through distancing. And I don't think that that helps you, because that's also a stress phenomena in my own system. We call this often taking care of myself, but I think the only taking care of myself is if I evolve my own inner experience, which means that everybody has some sort of trauma inside, and sooner or later that's going to get triggered. So I need to do my inner work, and that actually is the support the healthcare system needs in order to turn it into a sustainable environment where we have people that can work for decades with joy and with, you know, kind of longevity in the system and not get drained and burned out and have all kinds of other side effects. Because that system is so bombarded with trauma, I think we invest way too little in training on that side. There's a great professional training, and that's very important, but I think we need more inner training to match that. And that's what I mean. So I would say emotional maturity means that I can stay related also to emotionally difficult circumstances and find a relationship to it. That also means that I'm resilient in those moments. So then I can digest the stress versus distance myself from stress, and then I take it home somehow in a different way. That's what I meant.
This is beautiful. Like, Thomas, this is absolutely beautiful. To be honest, this is why I, at that time, decided that I needed to leave the conventional medical system, because I was not able to create the environment that I needed to be able to do my inner work, stay regulated, and be bombarded with all of what comes at you in that medical system in the time frame that it does, where you're expected to see so many patients in so many minutes. And how can I hold the space for all of them? Like, I just don't have the time. So I made that decision because of this. Like, you're right on. And what I'd love for you to mention as we come to a close here is this idea of distancing ourselves. And we have called that self-care. One of the big words that I've heard come up in professionals, and even those professionals coming into my biology of trauma training, they're using this word a lot. And I've worked intentionally to redirect this word. And that word is boundaries. They come in and they say, oh, I need to have boundaries in order to protect myself from getting burnt out. And yet when I hear that word boundaries, I hear that contraction that you're talking about. I hear the distancing myself, and would love for you to just speak on how, again, you've said it, but just say it again, how it's actually the taking care of myself, doing the inner work myself, so that I can remain integrated, I can remain receptive, I can remain regulated in the midst of that and not need to distance myself in order to regain some semblance of regulation.
So we need to say that every one of us has certain defense mechanisms in place that how we deal with kind of intense situations or with potential overwhelm, because we have been overwhelmed in the past, most of us somehow. And so there are already some functions in place. And some of them are like the distancing. So let's first confirm that there is intelligence in that mechanism. And same as there is intelligence in the trauma response that happens when people go through very adverse situations, and the trauma response in itself is an intelligence to protect. And then if it's not being taken care of, it has sometimes even severe after effects. I just want to say this up front, because otherwise we say, okay, we shouldn't do it that way. That's not what we mean when we are talking here. So it's not a self-judgmental, oh, I'm not able to do it differently. Until now in my development, I came to a place that is the highest function that I found out for myself to deal with it. But I want to be curious, what are other options that are maybe more suitable for me today than what I'm applying, maybe sometimes unconsciously, over decades already. So if we look at it like that, we say, okay, we want to transform one level of intelligence into another level of intelligence that is more up to date with where I am today in my life. And then, yes, I would say, because the distancing factor or the distancing process is a process that is a defense mechanism against a certain experience that I'm having. And once I become curious what that is and I explore it in myself, and when we do it together, I think to do it as a group together is very important, because then, first of all, we can open up, we know similar circumstances, and then we can see what are new options. And then when I hear that child having that issue, or when I am getting attacked by a parent that is very stressed about their child, so I get triggered and then I do this, I find more interest together as a group, what can be done differently. And one step is to explore my own discomfort. When I say, I think for everybody that is interested in a deeper inner work, having some kind of reflection process, what are my difficult situations in a day? So what today was difficult for me? And then I sit down for a few minutes and I kind of review that situation and say, okay, what actually happened in my body? I became tight. What was it? My stress levels? It went up. What was my emotional experience? I got scared, or I got angry, or I felt ashamed. And then I break down difficult. I take off the word difficult and I look what's actually my experience. And then from the experience, we can grow more what I would call maturity in my emotional response, because that's usually where the difficulty lies, to the situation. And so, of course, we develop boundaries, but some people, when they hear boundaries, they think it's like a wall. And boundaries, you see this in martial art, real boundaries are fluid ways to stay related to the situation. In the good martial arts, you look at how to be in relation to an attack, not to block, because once you block, you get overrun. But when you stay in relation, you actually find ways to redirect that energy that comes at you. I think a similar way of boundaries is, okay, I'm resting in myself enough that I can be in a present relation to the challenges. And I find a way to negotiate that moment to moment to moment. I think that's a healthy way of looking at boundaries, which includes what's happening in my body. Because many of us learned, because I often say children are the prisoners of their parents. And I think that doesn't sound so romantic, but that's what it actually is. Because if children grow up with parents at 2 years old or 4 years old, you cannot say, listen, I'm out of here. It's a bad party. And so you need to stay. So what do? You cannot regulate your outer experience as we can maybe do as grownups, but you have to over-regulate your internal experience. And then as grownups, even if we had the chance to do it differently, we often don't do it differently. We still hyper-regulate our internal experience and not the outer experience well. And I think to bring that back into the relational space is actually the work we all need to do in order to stay more healthy and live a sustainable life. And I think that's what you're also pointing to when you speak about boundaries and be curious about the process. I think that's very important.
I mean, it's that curiosity that will allow you to open up even to your own inner work rather than contract and want to distance yourself from even what you see inside of yourself. That curiosity is essential for that. If we go into it with the judgmental, with a judgmental emotion around that, there's a lot of contraction.
That's right. And also, like with curiosity, we begin to explore it in ourselves with that we don't need to know. We can be in a state of finding out, because especially with professionals, it seems like many professionals are in a place of knowing a lot of their time, because that's their job in their profession. But to come into a state that I don't know so much about, even myself in certain areas, and I'm willing to be curious and in a learning space. I think if I can allow myself to be in the not knowing of learning, then it allows me to really see more. And then it allows me also to train my nervous system, when we circle back to the beginning, to be more attuned. How often do we see like interactions or patients or client interactions that are very little attuned? So the patients are basically in a stressed situation, but kind of on their own. When we say that I feel you and I feel you feeling me is the basic building block of relating, and is also the most co-regulative space we can create with one another. I think more of that, even if it's sometimes challenging, is really good, I think, also for health outcomes.
Absolutely. This reminds me that so many of the professionals that come to work with me, obviously, they're very much like where I used to be. So much in our heads, all we do is think. And that's how we were taught. So again, there's no judgment, there's no shame. It's that process of almost introducing them to their own body again. They go through this process wanting to follow all of those thoughts, to know, to understand, well, why did my body just do that? Why did my body just feel that? And we start with that. And then the foundational journey that I start with them with, it's that process of, can we not need to know that right now, but just stay with it and just be mm-hmm. with it. And this process of learning rather than I need to know, and that you've mm-hmm. so beautifully described.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I think our entire culture supports this more disembodied space. And I think that's another collective trauma symptom, like the wherever we are hurt, where our grandparents or parents or whatever the culture that we grew up in, the disembodiment is a natural function of trauma. So when we see it that way, then we say, wow, it's not that that's a bad thing. It's just what we have been born into. And now it's our job to re-embody ourselves. And everybody starts at a different place. And sometimes embody ourselves, saying, no, if somebody is good as in a certain sports discipline, then the person has to be embodied. But that's not true. Like, embodiment means that we are really able to be in a regulated state in our bodies and be able to bring a lot of awareness to our internal landscape. And when we start that process, we actually see it's like at the beginning a bit clumsy maybe, but then more and more my body is actually a space that I inhabit again. And I have a lot of data that I can draw from my body that is very important for interaction. So I think that the embodiment work is really important and sometimes sounds too simple in very intellectual circles. It sounds, oh, it's so simple, the body, but actually there's so much information in the body. And I think there's a lot of, I often call it sense making or understanding, when the mind, emotions, and the body are aligned again. So it becomes one data flow through the central nervous system. Then there is alignment. Then there's data flow. And I think that's cognition, and sensing is sense making. And then more what we say and what is in us, like the state that we are in, becomes congruent. That's again authentic. And authenticity creates more understanding in systems. So I think it's very good for our social systems to be in a state of sense making.
If there is one word that I could use to summarize what I've heard you say in this interview, is flow. Mm-hmm. Because it's the flow of the relationship, right? Like, I feel you and I feel you feeling me. There's this flow between us, and the flow that I have with my own system, rather than it being the stagnation or the tension. And even with that, like, there's so many different images that come to mind in my experience with the body, and there is stagnation of fluids. There is stagnation that happens in our physical body mm-hmm. as it relates to this. And so this flow of data and information and flexibility, the boundaries and the flow of that, paints a very beautiful picture of what is possible, mm-hmm. what is possible for us to step into. That's what I would also hear you saying, is that there's no judgment on how our body has done up until now. It has just operated off of the best mechanism that it had with its own intelligence. We just got to be open to the possibilities of more flow and what that could look like for us.
Exactly. Beautifully summarized, right?
What a powerful interview. And I hope you get a vision of what is possible. What is possible for you with understanding a greater idea of trauma and bringing in ancestral trauma, but even just how trauma becomes a stagnation of flow and information. And as a professional, open to the possibilities of what more presence that you can have. What more flow can you have and what that might mean for your life personally and for your work? I get excited when I look at the possibilities that we have, because when we do our own work and we start with just this, connecting with my body in a safe way, in a way that keeps us out of the overwhelm, oh my goodness, it just opens us up to the possibilities and letting the body kind of guide that process and say what it's ready for, and knowing how to even develop that sense of the inner movements that we talked about in this interview. Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Biology of Trauma podcast. As always, I have links for you in the show notes. There are supplements that can help us when we have this chronic trauma. Chronic trauma has an impact on our systems, on our health, multiple systems, in fact. And so we want to be replenishing it for it to have the repair and safety so that we can even be attuned to other people. Try Magnesium Power. Is magnesium that will help our body replenish the magnesium depletion that happens with chronic stress and trauma. And we need to help our own body come out of a chronic functional freeze. If we are going to be attuned and regulated, we want to come out of that freeze and chronic trauma response. Cellular energy support is a way to help our body have the energy to come out of the chronic functional freeze. And then I have a guide for you. This is the Essential Sequence Guide. This is a guide that will walk you through the sequential steps for addressing stored trauma in the body. There is a specific order to safely open up, especially when we already have a chronic health symptom. And we want to be creating safety for our own body moving forward, not just learning how to create safety for others and in our relationships, but for our relationship with ourselves. Our own body, even at the cellular level. I also have a pocket guide for this essential sequence so that if you are a practitioner or a professional and you want a more condensed version that you can easily digest the information, even use it to teach your own patients and clients, I will have that link for the pocket guide for the essential sequence. I'm your host, Dr. Amy, and until next episode, lots of love.
Thank you for joining me today. If you enjoyed today's show, be sure to subscribe. We definitely will learn, laugh, and sometimes cry together on this healing journey, and you won't want to miss an episode. Give my podcast 5 stars, share it with a friend or colleague. If you felt an impact as it truly helps get the word out and breaking the paradigm of how we do trauma work. I look forward to seeing you back here next week. Until then, this is your host, Dr. Amy, sending you lots of love.